How do you summarize a classroom into one letter? It's not enough information.
That's today's guest, author, educator, and ungrading guru, Chris Gleason, talking about the limitations of traditional grading. Welcome to Music Ed Insights. I'm leadership trainer and former band director, Alan Fire, here with composer and co-college music education program head, Steve Shanley.
Each episode, Alan and I talk with national thought leaders in music education with practical insights for K-12 music educators.
Steve, tell us about our guest.
Chris Gleason is the arts and creativity consultant for the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. He has been named Wisconsin Teacher of the Year and was also a semifinalist for the Grammy Music Educator Award. He produces and co-hosts the podcast Beyond Artless, has been featured in the books Think Like Socrates and Rehearsing the Middle School Band, and his 2019 TEDx talk is entitled Lighting a Fire in Kids, Three Insightful Teaching Truths. Find Chris's full bio, show notes, and resources at musicedinsights.com. Alan, what was the takeaway you had from this episode?
I appreciate the reminder about Daniel Pink's work on motivation. Autonomy, mastery, and purpose can drive students and teachers. What about you, Steve?
As someone who very much values assessment, yet detests assigning grades, this discussion was right up my alley. For those of you who need help shifting from the traditional grading method and moving into the 21st century, Chris will get you headed in the right direction.
Yes, and no matter how you grade, if you're fostering student voice, curiosity, and intrinsic motivation in your classroom, everyone wins. Speaking of winning, it's almost time for the private Zoom with Alan and Steve for the month of March. Insiders, watch your email. If you want the benefits of being a Music Ed Insights insider, head to our website to learn more. For now, let's listen to this episode with Chris Gleason.
Chris Gleason, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here. Thanks for asking.
We've asked you here today to speak with us about ungrading, and I would like to get to that in a bit. But first, can you please talk a little bit about why we as educators should question the traditional grading methods that have existed for decades? I mean, I'm a product of those, Alan is a product of those, and we turned out just fine. Thank you very much.
Well, that's debatable. let me ask you, what grade would you give your breakfast this morning?
Good enough. A C, I guess.
I'd go B minus for nutrition, A minus for temporary pleasure, D plus for sustainability.
Now, let's just imagine, though, for a minute that you are on the show Survivor, you know, or something, and you haven't eaten in a month. What grade would you give the breakfast then?
A triple plus, man. How about you, Steve?
For sure.
We're just talking about food, for goodness sakes, right? We're not even talking about the capacity in which teachers are teaching and learners are learning. How do you summarize a classroom into one letter, much less the content of what you've learned over the course of maybe a year or multiple years, and siphon it all the way down to one letter, one number, even one word? It's not enough information. Now, the thing I did wrong as a young educator is I graded everything. And, you know, students would be sitting there ready for band. And I would be like, no, can't start yet. Because I was going up and down the rows and marking, you know, numbers for like pencil, sitting up, you know, I mean, you're breathing today. Hey, that's plus five. It just got ridiculous. In fact, students would raise their hand like, Mr. Gleason, can we start making music? I'm like, no, just settle down. I'm grading. This is what teachers do.
All right. So what does this look like in my seventh grade choir or in my high school band? What does ungrading look like? What are the big changes that I may be going to need to make either in how I do things or how I think about things? I've accepted. Well, I agree with your argument that I can't grade my breakfast, really. So what next?
I've got seven things. Okay. Seven per, because everyone loves numbers anyway, right?
I like seven. Could you also use the word paradigm shift as you describe this?
I would be happy to. So number one, grading is not necessary, but feedback is. The feedback loop is important. Kids need feedback, as do teachers. We need to have that loop happening. The second big thing is assessment's not the same as evaluation. Assessment requires you to gather information and to evaluate it, but it doesn't mean the act has to always be grade. Most of the time, it's information for you as the practitioner to find out if what you thought worked actually worked, and if you think they're actually where you think they're supposed to be. Or even better yet, where are they starting? Teachers, how well do you know your kids? Where are they diagnostically? Those kids walking into your classroom, any pushback on the first two? Am I good?
Now you're preaching to the choir here.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. We're on to three. Three is this. Start with why. If the students don't understand the relevance of what they're doing in the first place, then they shouldn't be doing it. I mean, think about it. It's like working a second shift. You're asking these kids to do things beyond the school day that they don't understand the practicality or the reason to do it anyway. So I go back to Dan Pink a lot. Dan Pink wrote a great book called Drive. And in that book, he talks about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. These are the three essential ingredients for intrinsic motivation. And whenever I see education going really well, I see those. It's got to be organic. You know, Ken Robinson, I've mentioned his name before too, but he was a great teacher. You know, he once said, great farmers know what the conditions for growth are and the bad ones don't. He would say that, you know, you can't make a plant grow. It grows itself. Great teachers know what the conditions for growth are and the bad ones don't. What we are doing as educators and as administrators and so on is creating the conditions for growth. Kids want to learn. They're born to learn. What instruction booklet was ever been given to a child like, this is how you speak, or this is how you shall walk? No, they're curious. The problem is that we tend to educate the curiosity out of them. My goal, as I kept teaching, went from how do I become the best band in my city or my county to, at the end here, has been how can my students become more curious every single day? And I think that's the philosophical shift that we need to make. So we go to shift number four, and that is this. Who's doing the assessing? See, I found out that kids, think about this. Think back to when you were 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, whatever. You learn from your classmates. You're highly social. You care a lot about what they're saying, right? And you get a lot of information from others. It doesn't have to just be from the teacher. But I also learned that some of my best teachers were the ones that asked the most questions. They didn't tell me what to do, always. They asked me the best questions. So as I kept teaching, I started to realize that. And when a student would come in maybe for some extra help or to play, I'd say, okay, what was your goal for this week? What went well? What was the challenge? How'd you overcome it? What do you think comes next? What would be the next thing to work on? Why'd you pick those? What are some strategies to make sure you have it done? What would happen if you get it done sooner? What happens if you don't make it? How will you feel when you accomplish this? That to me is good teaching. It's not saying, which would be a lot easier. Okay, do number five, do it again, F sharp. I'm sorry, it's second valve. A lot of sarcasm, that helps too. Second valve. I'll just tape your finger to that valve and then you come back and play it for me again tomorrow, okay? Tonight, practice 45 minutes, no less, okay? Otherwise, you're not getting the cookie, you're not getting the token. All right, great, thanks for being a student. There's a difference there. The questions are harder, yes. It takes more time, yes. But kind of like constructivism, it's worth that time. Howard Gardner once said this, one can have the best assessment imaginable, but unless the accompanying curriculum is of quality, the assessment has no use. And so that became apparent to me too. It's like, okay, you know, I got to make sure I'm teaching quality literature, that I know what the music is about in context and in content and so on, and then build some great outcomes and strategies and so on, so that I know what I'm assessing and what I'm looking at in the first place, you know, so that I get good feedback. But not only important, I know what best questions to ask my students so that they can ask and answer those questions themselves. So that's a big one. That's shift number five. You gotta teach quality content, curriculum, and so on. Think about this too, arts educators. Who chooses your curriculum? Does the principal come down and say, you will sing this octavo this year, or you will play this piece? And oh, by the way, the school across town is doing the same thing, and we will do a comparative analysis. You know, like, we shudder at the thought of that, right? Yet our math friends and colleagues and so on are doing that constantly. It's constant data and comparisons based on standardized test scores and so on. Yet in music, we still have the privilege and the autonomy to say, I'm selecting this piece. And that is the curriculum. That is the curriculum for what our kids, it's the air they breathe. Shift six, when to assess. Think about this, educators. When do you assess? Now, it was pretty easy as I started thinking about my own teaching. I would think about the outcomes, right? Outcome-based education, right? Where are we going for? What's the aim? Okay, we call that the summative. Fine, write it down. Where are you headed? That one is pretty easy to kind of figure out. By the end of this unit, blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the next one, though. Think about the diagnostic. I think this is the one that's the most overlooked with educators, and that is, where are my students starting? Like, I might be pretty good at saying that's where we want to go, but where are we beginning and where are they at, and really trying to plot? Now, some of those students will already be at your summative, right? I mean, let's be real. Those kids that either understand the musical concepts, were born in a band room, whatever, your music classrooms, art classrooms. The thing is that you're going to have some students there, and then you're going to have some that are not even on the same planet, right? And as educators, that's the thing. No child left behind, pun intended. But it's the concept, though, is there, right? It's like, how do we get these students and how do we gather them up to get them along the path? Now, the path is the formative, right? It's looking at what you're doing along the way. Now, here's a big thought. Every strategy is an assessment. Every strategy that you do in your classroom is a formative assessment. Don't create another test. The best educators I know their kids so well and do this. Now, wait, they observe their students doing learning. And when you do that, you're gathering data and information. They can speak at length about their students. That's the concept here. It's like, you don't have to do more. You don't have to create more tests. All right. So here's the last one. 7, how to assess. I believe the secret to life, going big here, and assessment is to pay attention. Notice, ask questions, be curious, create opportunities for students to demonstrate learning in ways that speak to them as individuals. Again, going back to this idea of autonomy, mastery, and purpose. The thing is, if you ask your students, okay, kids, we've been talking about the form of this piece of music. Can you show me in any way that you want that you understand the concept of the form of this music and the importance it plays? Had a student, loved Minecraft, loved it. He decided to take the music and then create an entire world based on that. And then kind of like stop motion animation, he took a screenshot of every movement of that character on Minecraft and then linked it up perfectly with the music to resemble the form, and then wrote a nice paragraph saying, this is the whole thing. I said, how long? It was a 5.5 minute piece. You basically created an animated feature. How long did that take? He's like, that was about 24 hours.
So what does this look like in a building where I am expected to give A's, B's, C's, F's, or I have to give, you know, I'm doing standards based, or do the students decide their own grades? Do you just tell the administrator, nope, I'm not doing grades in my class anymore, try to fire me? Like, what does this look like practically?
Yeah, it looks like unemployment, but you know, there's plenty of other jobs. No, I'm just kidding. All great communication begins with relationships. It's about building trust and relationships. If your administrator trusts you and so on, then you're going to have a little more room, right? So it depends on your relationship to the administrator. My recommendation to those that I speak to and so on is, number one, you got to know what you're talking about. Ungrading doesn't just mean you abandon grades. Ungrading means that you, one, realize the importance of feedback, and you create avenues for students to do really heavy, like, self-reflections in ways that they are going to gauge what excellence looks like and their continuum on that path. There's a lot of great resources out there about competency-based learning and looking at skill acquisition and gaining these things. To me, the way it looked like is this. I would ask my students to use, it's a thing that not many people have heard of. It's called Google Forms. Just Google it. Google Forms. And the students would fill out a Google form based on our standards, the things that we worked on and so on, and answer questions. And then I would use a nifty little add-on called Autocrat. So that's an add-on. Because when you fill out a Google form, where does it end up?
A spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly. A Google sheet. Yeah. Once you go into the Google Sheets, you add on Autocrat, and there's another one called Formule. All it is like a mail merge application. And here's what you do. You create a template that says, hey, parents and caregivers, it's good to see you. Traditional grading is dumb. Well, maybe not those exact words, but you can say it inherently is flawed because the complexity in which we teach does not resemble or does not show up in just one letter. Your child is not just a number or letter to me. They're much more, as is their learning, as is what we're doing in our classrooms. I'd spell it out. I'd show the proficiency, the things that we're working on, the way it all lays out. And then I would show the question I asked. And then the right-hand side would be all the student responses, long narrative responses. Now, the beautiful thing about Autocrat is it would say to you, hey, Chris, I'm like, yeah, do you want to send this out to the parents? I'm like, absolutely, send it out, you know? And so it would grab the parent email, parent or caregiver email, and then it would mail merge it and then say to me, do you want it as a Word doc or a PDF? And I'm like, PDF? And it'd say, would you like a copy in your own Google folder? Knock it out. Go for it. Would you like to personalize it? Please do. So what that fulfilled for me is a few things. One, it lifted up student voice. It allowed them to have more agency in what they're doing in their classroom. It provided caregivers and parents and so on more information about what the students were doing in my classroom, where it was much more than just the notes that we were learning about, you know, beyond the notes. We were learning about context, about their music and so on. But it also did it in an efficient way where I had technology, and this is even like 12 years ago I started that, where technology is working on my behalf, and with one button click, it would do a band of 200 and send them out to their parents and so on, and then shove them in a folder so I could have that resource as well. So I think we need to harness technology. I think we got to think about the philosophical part of this, where we're allowing students to have more agency, more voice in this. I think we got to get rid of numbers and labels and so on, and instead go back to asking students more thoughtful, deep questions, having them understand what excellence looks like. And if we do those things, what I've found from my own practice, that kids will achieve beyond what we think is possible.
Is it okay for me in the meantime to maybe compartmentalize how I approach things that maybe the nature of what I am expected to do in my school is assign numbers or points or a letter grade. And I'm going to do that to the extent I have to. But philosophically, here's where I am. I'm on this ungrading thing. And that's what I'm really spending my time and care about. That is there kind of a middle ground for the people who are teaching someplace where the parents are expecting to see A's, B's, C's, and they want it to look and be a certain way, but maybe what is driving me underneath. So maybe on the surface, I am not truly ungrading, but philosophically, the way I'm approaching what I do and how I assess, I am doing that from an ungrading standpoint. Is that compromise even possible in your eyes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, here, think about this, educators. Is there a stipulation that says that students cannot have input into their own grades? Rarely do I find that. Rarely I go to schools and they're like, well, yeah, you know, they can have input into their own grade. Okay, well, what does that look like then? You know, and so ultimately what it would show up for me, because I was in the same situation. My school was not going to let me abandon grades completely. They're like, no, at the end of the day, you know, Infinite Campus or whatever we were using at the time, you know, it's like, you got to put the number or letter in there. And I'm like, well, can I put narrative? And they're like, only if it's 40 characters. I'm like, who designed this system? You know, like, that's not good enough. In fact, I even asked, when it comes to posture, okay, if I were to grade that specific like skill set, okay, think about this. Can I get rid of three? And they're like, why do you want to get rid of three? I'm like, because it's right. Either you're doing posture right, or I have to like remind you, you know what I mean? Or you just don't, you don't know how to do it. So it's like a 4-2-1 in my opinion. Like, I don't want to have a three. Can I get rid of three? And they're like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, okay, well, again, that's dumb. Like, I don't get it. So here's my point, educators, and that's this. At the end of the day, you can ask your students, after looking at everything you just filled out, all the questions I had asked, all the markers of excellence and everything that we agreed on as a class and we've come up with, where do you place yourself? I know that numbers and letters don't justify everything you've done, but if you have to give yourself a letter or a number, why? And here, let me ask you this question. Think about your own students. What do they tend to do? Grade themselves too easy or too hard?
Too hard.
Usually too hard, yeah.
And the thing is like, sometimes incredibly too hard, where it would lead to a good conversation. Like I would go to the student and say, oh, no, you are not a D minus. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, show me how that is. And now occasionally there'd be a student like, dude, I'm an A plus. Okay, you're going to have to show me some evidence because, you know, like, here's what I see, but I'm open, you know, like, talk, you know, what do you see? And again, it led to really good conversations about where folks are at and so on. And again, if it has to come down to a letter and number, then make them part of the process, though.
Well, I will definitely encourage listeners to go to our webpage, musicedinsights.com, and take advantage of all of the great resources that Chris has given us for future. If you want to dive into this more, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So we've got lots of stuff there for you to investigate further. But before we let you go, Chris, I got to ask you 5 quick questions. Are you willing to stick around for the lightning round?
I was going to do 6, but I'll take 5.
All right. Favorite restaurant in Madison, Wisconsin?
I'm going to say the Old Fashioned.
All right. I assume they serve old fashions there. Wisconsin style.
Mighty good. And cheese curds. So yeah, it's everything Wisconsin.
All right. How about piece of music, composer, or performer that you wish more people knew about?
Kalijah Dunton. He's a young Black composer. He wrote a piece called Master of My Fate. And it's a brilliant young composer. So I hope folks go check him out.
Great. How about your favorite vacation destination?
I'm going to say Hawaii. And ask me, have I been there?
Have you been there?
No. No, I haven't. But I'm telling you, if I go, it will be my
favorite.
It will
be your favorite.
So shout out to Hawaii. You know, I'll come and talk assessment.
I'm lucky enough to have been there. I think you will enjoy it. How about the most memorable live music performance you've attended?
Well, at first I thought about Bon Jovi.
I'm jealous. I would have loved to have seen Bon Jovi.
It was pretty spectacular. I gotta say, it was pretty amazing. But I heard Chicago Symphony, and they did Shostakovich 7 years ago. And man, you just sat there, and it's just like, okay, I don't know if I'll ever hear anything that beautiful ever again. So, yeah, that was amazing.
And finally, a book recommendation for our listeners.
Look, we mentioned it. You gotta read it. Drive by Dan Pink.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a classic.
Yep, I echo that. Yeah, absolutely. Chris Gleason, this is inspiring and informative and practical. Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Music Ed Insights.
We're supported by Group Dynamic, a leading provider of youth leadership workshops. Alan works with dozens of schools each year to help develop their leaders. Learn more at groupdynamic.net/youth-leadership.
Or you could email me at alan@groupdynamic.net. Also sponsored by the Coe College Music Education Program. They've got a website too.
Just click their link at our website or email me at sshanley@coe.edu.
Also, The Normal Design, helping normal companies and people create memorable, meaningful, and professional designs and branding. More at thenormaldesign.com.
And Winterset Websites, website design and maintenance. WinterSetWebsites.com.
Our Facebook page is Music Ed Insights.
Our website has program notes, links, and a one-page download of this episode's key takeaways. That's MusicEdInsights.com.
New episodes generally drop every couple weeks on Monday.
Get current.
Stay relevant.
Music Ed Insights.